talked about prairie chickens last time, I commented about how it must have sounded to be surrounded by hundreds or thousands of prairie chickens in a lek instead of the 22 I was in the midst of. One of my friends told the story of his now-deceased Aunt Mathilda Sagang, who got an autobiography of his great-grandfather translated into English. That's how my friend became acquainted with the adventures of his great-grandfather, who homesteaded up in Otter Tail County in western Minnesota back in 1873. According to the biography he wrote in Norwegian in his old age, back around 1878, after planting, with some free time, he and another young man decided to go check out the rumors of great opportunities for farming in what was then Dakota Territory. So they organized some blankets and a tent, a barrel of flour, some hardtack, and a side of bacon, coffee, the usual stuff, a couple of shotguns, and loaded it all into a wagon with a couple of horses and set off literally for the territory. My friend recalls from reading the autobiography that they spent maybe 3 weeks this way covering a lot of territory. They'd travel all day, having some hardtack and water for lunch. Then around 5 p.m, one of them would hop off the wagon and go kill a half dozen prairie chickens while the other one kept traveling. Apparently, finding enough prairie chickens never took more than half an hour. Then they'd stop. One of them would set up a bit of camp and start a fire while the other cleaned the chickens. They'd cook and eat them, and then in the morning eat whatever was left with their bacon and coffee, and carry on the same way the next day. My friend commented that basically the time and effort involved in getting enough prairie chickens to keep the two of them traveling outdoors and find supply of food was just about what it would take to stop at the supermarket on the way home from work. The sheer abundance of bird life on this continent before Columbus landed is hard for us to fathom now. What happened to it all? Young men eating their fill of the prairie's bounty weren't what decimated the prairie chickens. It was the sum total of all these people flooding in from Europe and their firm belief that what was natural was suspect and needed to be dominated. They wanted to tame the land in the way that they'd tamed their home countries, where the land's riches had been squandered so many millennia before that they never even suspected that they and their ancestors had created the very conditions that led to their fleeing to America. And since they didn't realize this, they were doomed to do the same thing to the land here. After the Dust Bowl, one might think that we'd have learned our lesson. But we're as short-sighted as ever, now using poisons to tame anything that doesn't yield to our will. And as Rachel Carson predicted, these poisons are building and starting to poison us as well as the plants and animals they were designed to target. This week's Minneapolis Star Tribune reports on unsafe levels of nitrates and pesticides in drinking water from private wells in Dakota County, Minnesota. If sport hunters didn't decimate the prairie chickens, neither did sport hunters bring them back. It was cheaper and perhaps more fun to import from China a bird more amenable to development and agriculture, the ring-necked pheasant, which itself contributed to the decline of prairie chickens and Bob Whites. Now we pin our hopes on the Nature Conservancy and the National Wildlife Refuge System to do our heavy lifting. If you want to help ensure that prairie chickens continue to exist, to keep alive a vibrant and thrilling part of our own histories, as well as a worthy member of creation, head to your local post office and buy a duck stamp. 98% of that money goes directly to habitat acquisition in the National Wildlife Refuges. And join the Nature Conservancy. For the Birds is supported by binoculars.com and this radio station. I'm Laura Erickson speaking for the Birds. ¶¶